from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Now it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis's sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. Well, of course, thank you all for listening. As always, you can listen right here on 92.9 FM ESPN or 680 AM. But if you want to keep up with all of the programming here at 92.9, you can do so anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app. Stay up to date with everything going on right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week, closing out the week, he's the director and head coach of Team Thad. You can always follow him on Twitter on X at DreamBigHerd. Follow him on Instagram, I am Coach Herd. Team Thad Nation on all social medias. Coach, good day.
Great day and a week this course. Great day, Jeffrey.
Great day to end the week. We got the opening ceremonies going on in Paris. And Herd, I'm not sure I think I've ever... in my wildest dreams could have said, I'm going to see these three people sitting at a desk at the same time. Peyton Manning, Mike Tirico, and Kelly Clarkson. Peyton Manning in a suit, but he also has his quarterback band on. The play sheet, like the play band. And he's got the Nike, the one that like opens up, and you can put three play cards in there. So electric television appears over on NBC. We've got the countries going through on boats on the river. Not exactly a postcard day for Paris. It's looking kind of cold, rainy. Seems like we got everybody with ponchos on. So we'll do what we normally do on Fridays. What are we going to talk about on Monday? Take a look at what interests us coming up this weekend. 2:35, Blake Topmeyer is going to join the show. We'll talk all things SEC with him. 3:05, we'll get into the list. We'll maybe talk about our games of the weekend, tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I suppose, Herd, let's start with... what do you got going this weekend?
Family stuff. We're doing some, games at the gym, but it's not a lot going on right now. Youth games at the gym over there at Reform and Shoot 360 and, little family stuff. First week back in town in a while.
When we were growing up, it was Cocoa Beach. What is Pete's Jam? What ends the season now? What ends the summer season?
Yeah, kind of. For 80-90% of the teams. Now, when Pete's Jam was just... 3, 4, 5, 6 days.
Yeah.
But, when you've been there 2 weeks, you still got an event in Vegas and you got an event in Dallas. But sometime when you've been somewhere for two and a half weeks, some of the kids and parents are a little like...
yeah, that's enough.
That's enough. So I'm gauging everybody's interest. I think we're pretty done, but I'm starting to get texts now like, oh, I finally have recovered. So over the weekend, but Peace Jam, it do end the season for a lot of people.
Okay, so I think the real question to start with is, and this is something that interests me in general, and maybe we'll find out. Do we care about the Olympics?
Do you mean as a whole,
yeah,
a certain sport?
Yeah, like how into it are we? Because I've noticed my wife is into it, and I do think in general it seems like women get into it way more than men do, but I don't really have a good sense of it. I think what always happens inevitably for me is I don't really care, and then you slap the medal count up there, and you put the letters USA, and all of a sudden I'm back in caring. But it's not like, I haven't done like any prep of like, what are the weird sports that you could wind up getting into? You and I have talked about, we followed the Olympic team, but it's not like, obviously I'm going to want Team USA to win versus not, but if they lose, it is not going to hurt me at any level. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'll think that like that's a bad look, like that you have that team, but it's certainly like not, this is not like the Giants losing a playoff game. This doesn't really affect my mood.
That's where we differ a little. Now, I ain't talking about other sports because I love the USA. But if the basketball team don't win the gold, that would hurt my heart. Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and all on them three alone, people have been waiting to see to get together. LeBron, Steph Curry, and KD all together. You know, KD and Steph
before. This is Steph's first Olympics. He's never been on the Olympic team.
That's crazy. And everybody been wanting to see him and LeBron. Like, yeah. They have been like the two most popular players. Like when I was over with Under Armour, Steph Curry was the most popular player in the world for a long time. But in the years that he wasn't, it would go back and forth with LeBron. So, yeah, I would be hurt if those two guys didn't win it. We got Anthony Davis. We got Embiid. I mean, how can we not win it?
So, I'm talking more of like, you know, like when you got one of your teams, how long did it take to you get over the Super Bowl?
That took a minute.
You know what I mean? Like, there's losses that you know, like, it's stupid and it shouldn't be this way, but there are losses that it just changes your mood. Like, you're in a bad mood, and I would view it as that is a really bad look. There's no way this team should lose. But in the end, it's like, it feels kind of like it's a made-for-TV event. And so it doesn't affect me in the same way. It doesn't affect me in the same way like if one of my teams were in a playoff situation and lost. You see, like it's because the Olympics, it's not like, to me it's different than when you have the other countries where all those guys play on the national team almost every year. We basically decide in Olympic years, all right, let's get the band together and we assemble the team and then go. But it's not as if like it's a team that we've grown up knowing and watching. And I totally agree from the sense of LeBron and Steph as being basically the faces of the league. LeBron way more than Steph, but Steph has been a clear number two.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still not like, okay, this is not the team that like I followed for years and here we go. Like they're building up to this. It just feels like, all right, we assembled our best guys and here we go. And it's just like, we're going to be on TV for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, like you said, it might not resonate or hurt as much as like the Giants and 49ers. Because they play every year.
Right.
You know, so of course a team to play every 4 years that you don't even know who's going to be on it, you know, from time to time, is not going to hurt as worse. But for me, I guess taking it out of context clues just for what America means for basketball and how the world is trying to say that, you know,
France is coming.
Yeah, they had the last two number one picks and this and that.
Wimby.
And the guy this year.
Yeah,
you know,
Sar and Richesse.
Yeah, 1 and 2, which we don't know how great they're, but they got the number 1 and 2 draft picks. They're going to be some wealthy men. And so with that being said, I'm not willing to turn the page. I still think America has the best basketball, and I think this will show it. And we haven't been dominant. And then I done told you also offer the next 2 years will be ours because we will have Cooper Flagg and AJ DeBye. I just think us losing with this group of talent would be and now we're going against more NBA players, but I just think it's unacceptable. And it definitely would like sting in overall basketball to a certain extent.
I think also the way that if they were to lose, it would kind of have to be the way, like, for instance, when Miami hit all the threes against Boston in the first round of the series, I didn't really sit there and go, like, uh-oh, Boston's in trouble. It was like, okay, if they show that they can go hit 25 threes again, well, then I'll acknowledge that maybe Miami could do this. If Team USA goes up against some team that just fires in, you know, 20-plus threes on them, hasn't, you know, shoots 50% from three, and they get beat that way, I think I can – I'm not exactly going to make it some type of indictment. I'm with you in the sense that Team USA, when you compare the rosters, this should not be even remotely close. But if, like, they have a – if they have a game where, you know, they're sloppy with the basketball, if they're kind of doing that thing that you and I have been talking about when you watch them – it almost feels like they take turns on offense. Like it's your, hey man, it's your time to go get some points. If that kind of, if it looks to me like they're not playing the right mix of guys, then yeah, I can, I think that would probably make me feel a different way. But at the same time, I still don't think this is going to be remotely close to me for like one of my teams actually in a playoff game.
No, that's understandable because, like you say, they don't grow together. You don't know who's on. So it's a four-year expanse, so we only get. But the reason I think that it is important for them to win, and I don't know, you probably know this a little better than me, Jeffrey. I think our basketball team, outside of some of our track stars and everything, are the most, like, recognizable because, like, I'm going to be real. I was telling you before, Era, like, I don't know who all is on our skateboard team this year. I don't know. I think you said rifle shooting and other things that I don't know everyone that's on it.
You're not getting into 10-meter air men's air pistol tomorrow?
See, no, I don't know okay. The guy over. I don't know who represents our country for that. So if we lose, it probably won't hurt me as much.
True story. Heard asked me before the show, like, who's like the best skateboarder right now? And I looked up the name. I've already forgotten it.
It's Naya.
Yeah, it's like Naya.
And
top.
It's a guy.
Yeah.
Because we went back so far, we started bringing up
Tony Hawk. Oh, yeah.
But I was like, we're probably 20 years past him at this point, or is that going too far somewhere in an era? I think he's 50-something now.
He is. I want to say maybe like his son married Kurt Cobain's daughter. Like that. Hmm. That was the last news that I think I saw. It's like one of his kids married someone else's famous kid. That's the last I've heard of Tony Hawk.
Yeah, I was telling you for the show, he was on, last I seen him was a few years ago. You know how these new shows and they're training and stuff? He was on some skateboard show on MTV.
Like finding the next skateboarder.
Or something like that. Yeah, I saw that with him. Yeah, it was interesting.
America's Next Top Skateboarder. Let's see. What about, can I talk you into, we got some badminton coming on at 1:30. Connor Dunning texted me that Tony Hawk Underground came out 21 years ago. That's how old we are.
Yeah.
That's also depressing.
Like, yeah.
I get it. Time goes for everyone. So we would also have handball tomorrow. I know everybody's into that. Rowing. We got some more shooting. Got some volleyball. And then, of course, the big one I do think, though, is Team USA tomorrow. In action. I think it's 2 p.m. Do we have Germany? I'm trying to remember. It's pool play. I mean, the other thing is the women losing would be a much bigger deal than the men losing. And I'm now at the point where them not having Caitlin Clark feels like just such a missed opportunity. Like, the whole point is get exposure. Like, this thing is just a TV event. I mean, like, for basketball, for the other ones that get basically 4 years to compete at the highest level, like that's a different thing. But in terms of basketball, it's a showcase.
It extremely is, and they're continuing trying to grow their brand. And she seems like the number one person, hottest person right now, as far as eyes on her. So it was a big topic. I know you saw this a lot, Jeffrey, about a month or so ago. You had half the people thought she should be on. Then some of it was like, yeah, but she don't deserve to be on by her talent right now, what she done put into it. She, you know, so we don't want to knock some people out who have put in work. But it's like, y'all fighting to get more money, love, and...
Well, it's like what you and I talked about. Does Derek White deserve to be on the men's national team? Is Derek White one of the
12 best players in America? Probably not.
And, I mean, that's with all due respect to Derek White.
Yeah, like, really good player.
But we can go through and what? Probably name at least another 10 guys?
Wasn't Christian Laettner on the 92 team?
Yeah, that was...
I know.
That's a little... So that's kind of it's a contextual thing. So the 92 team is the first time that we were allowed to use our pros. And so to honor kind of the spirit of playing the amateurs, they brought Laettner on the team.
Okay.
Like it was to bridge the gap between the way that it was and the
Where
way it was going to
be. Yeah,
right,
yeah,
okay. The way that it was going to be. I'm trying to remember who do we even play tomorrow? Because I see... Because our group is Germany, South Sudan, and Serbia, maybe? I think that's the pool play group. So, men's schedule, we would have... Why is this? Okay, so they play Serbia. Oh, no, they don't even play till the 28th. So, they play Sunday. They play Serbia. That's why I couldn't find it on the... And they play Sunday... Then they'll play on Wednesday and then Saturday. So it's every 3 days, and that's group play.
Serbia, ain't that...
That's Jokic.
That's Jokic.
That's the... Of the preseason tune-ups, I thought that was the game they looked the best, and it kind of makes sense because that was the game they were probably motivated because they were playing Jokic.
Yeah, and no disrespect to USA, but... He blew them so bad, I'm pretty sure they're like, even when we teaming up, let's just go on, try to dog Joker.
Yeah, I guess you could also make, they showed up against Canada, they just didn't make many shots. Like, defensively, Canada looked like they were in hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but, I don't know, that's kind of where we are. Anything random that you ever get into in the Olympics?
You know what? I kind of keep it simple, unfortunately, because every year, and I don't know if I should be ashamed of this, I learn of new stuff that I didn't even think was an Olympic sport.
So the new ones, I'm trying to see if I can do it off my head. The new ones are, because everyone keeps saying skateboarding. No, we had skateboarding at the last one. So we have some type of like speed rock climbing.
Speed rock climbing?
Yes.
Like you're trying to go fast up a hill?
Pretty much, yeah. Like you know, like the mountain climbing stuff, like yeah. the walls with like the little.
I thought they tell you take your time when I go do it. Like
yeah, no, I suppose now we figured out a way to make that a sport. Breakdancing.
Whoa.
Breakdancing is entering the fold.
Breakdancing. So I don't feel bad. The stuff that I look and see is actually new. It hadn't been around.
Correct.
Okay. I'd be like, I didn't know this.
Like skateboarding was the last one. And let's see what else they've added. Surfing, skateboarding, I don't know why they keep saying skateboarding was in the last one. Sport climbing and breakdancing.
Yeah, maybe they're doing a different skateboard than why they, like maybe.
Yeah, I don't.
So how do you compete to be one of the breakdancers? Because there's people that got rhythm all across. Like how do you win your first local neighborhood at the first day you start at your family, you win the backyard test, then it's a community thing, then a city,
I think now there's like a circuit for it.
For breakdance.
Yes. Like, cause I was seeing some of the promotional video and it seemed like they were in what looked like kind of like a concert hall, like one of those like old fashioned like concert halls, like in the round that you'd see.
Okay.
And like there was like Red Bull poster. It looked like there was some type of either a tour or whatnot. Like it's somewhat organized. Now, I don't know, like, do we have a U.S. Breakdancing Federation? Like, we have the men's, like, the U.S. Team USA Basketball Federation. Do we have U.S. Breakdancing Federation? Yeah. Like, I'd like to know.
Like, who's the number one breakdown?
What is the qualification process for that?
And how do they look? Because when I think of breakdancing, I kind of think about watching the old shows when people come in. Down the aisle or Soul Train. Is it that type of breakdancing or a little different?
I think it's like, you know, like when you go and you see it more like in big cities, like where just all of a sudden in the middle of a park,
street.
You'll see a guy dancing on his head.
Like Chris Brown and was going at each other breaking.
Correct.
Okay.
Let's see. Let's see if we can actually discover whether or not... Oh. This is the other thing. It's like when you try to figure out just how many. Okay, so we have the aquatic, like swimming, the usual stuff I'll get into, like the swimming, track and field. Obviously, we'll watch basketball. So for break dancing, although are they calling it breaking?
Breaking dancing? That might be something totally different,
okay.
Right?
Okay. Breaking competitions at the 2024 Summer Olympics are scheduled to run from the 9th to the 10th of August at Place de la Concorde, making the sport's official debut in the program and the first dance sport discipline to appear in the Summer Olympic history. Let's see. The breaking competition will comprise two gender-based medal events, one for the men, one for the women, where 16 B-boys and 16 B-girls will compete against each other in solo battles. Each contestant will incorporate and adapt a vast combination of dance moves, including power moves such as windmills, footwork such as the six step and freezes, improvising to the beat of a DJ's track. So, like, I'm curious. Like, do you try to throw the athletes off by like stopping it randomly, like stop the song randomly?
Yeah. This would be what a DJ there. I actually want to see this now.
The breaker with the highest number of points and rounds scored by the judges over his or her opponent in a solo battle will advance to the next round. So here we go. Qualification. A total of 32 quota places, so 16 men, 16 women, are available for eligible dancers to compete for the inaugural medals. Each nation can enter a maximum of four breakers, so four total. So you get two men, two women. Yeah, it says that there's a tripartite qualification route. There are world championships. So basically, it's a lot like, I think it's a lot like figure skating in the sense that you have these other competitions, and how you do on that, you accumulate points. And whoever, I guess it's like a ranking system, and then whoever's got the most points, those are your participants.
Okay.
Ooh. I think it's one of those ones that, it also feels like a sport that I'll be able to follow on Twitter. Like, yeah. You'll see, like, the best, like, someone will show you this, like, get a load of this. I don't know if it's one of those ones where, like, I'm setting the DVR saying, like, okay, this, I've got to see this event.
Yeah, I feel like whoever get the most retweets.
Yeah.
And popular, then we start saying, who is this guy named so-and-so? He had some pretty cool moves. Then you grow to be a fan from there.
Because even on their Wikipedia page, they don't list the contestants yet.
Have they not picked them yet? Would it be in August? Well, they had to pick them by now.
I would think you would have. I think everyone's got to finalize their rosters. Yeah. This 9th through 10th. Keep that on your schedule. All right. Back to the men. And this is the other interesting thing. Here's where I am. Here's what I am into. If they do lose, it's a bad look for Kerr, right?
You think?
I saw what you sent me with Rodman, Dennis Rodman, never wanted to shy away from a take. But basically, he's like, he does nothing. I do also think it is fair to say that feels like an impossible coaching situation. Like, how, you know what I mean? Like, how are you supposed to coach them all?
I think that Kerr is a really good coach, okay? This is where he hurts himself a little bit. When he had one injury, at least compete a little bit, that's how they was able to get James Wiseman. He have an injury or two, it go from winning 66 to like 20. Like
the worst, I think they were the worst team in the league.
Yeah, they were like top two worst teams in the league that year. And it's like, I think coaching, now you got to have good players, but I think you still had enough to like, when he don't have one of his star players, it has just been a major. Now, he does good with them when they're all together. I think you got to give him his credit because at the end of the day, everybody got to have a coach. And somebody brought this to my attention, too. I don't know if you ever thought about this. This might be the last, in the era of basketball now, this might be the last dynasty ever created.
So that was what Steph said.
Oh, okay.
So it's interesting because to a certain degree, I get what Steph means. What Steph is basically saying is, with the way that the league is set up now and the dispersal of talent, it will be difficult to have a collection of talent that good that can be that dominant. The only thing that I would push back on is, yeah, that's the way the league's constructed for right now, but what we see all the time is they change the CBA. Like, they'll change the structure. And to me, it's also like, we also don't know what's next. Like, what if Wembanyama is, what if he's like that guy? Are you telling me the Spurs won't have a run if he is indeed? I think the thing that has stood out to me is, I used to do it based on, let's see, I used to have it on a Google Doc. If you think about the NBA in these terms, so go to the 80s. Five players basically dominate the 80s. Bird, Magic, Moses Malone, it's the early Jordan, and Isaiah Thomas. So if you include Bird, Magic, Moses Malone, and Isaiah Thomas, they account for every championship in that decade. Then in the 90s, you have Jordan, Hakeem, probably to a lesser degree, David Robinson, Karl Malone, Barkley, Ewing, Shaq. You get the early part of Shaq. But that entire decade is largely defined by Michael Jordan. In the 2000s, early part, you have Shaq, Kobe, Duncan, Garnett, and then I guess Dirk-ish. But basically, Kobe and Shaq dominate. Kobe, Shaq, Duncan dominate that.
Duncan, okay.
Duncan dominate that era. And then, of course, you're bringing along LeBron. Like, in the same way Jordan with the 80s, you're bringing in LeBron. And then the 2010s, it's largely defined by LeBron, Steph, Kobe in the early part, and then Kawhi. And they basically account for all the championships. I think the thing that is interesting now is, are any of these guys on that level? Because traditionally in the NBA, the all-world player is what you have to win. And maybe what we're seeing is, if Steph is indeed correct, Boston basically wins by just having a better roster. But we did see a team like Detroit in 05. Was that 04 maybe? Yeah. Detroit in 04. Like, that was not a... They didn't have a top 5, top 10 player, but they had a really good, like, 1 through 7, 1 through 8. Like, everyone, almost everybody on their team was like a B+, A-. And so, are we going to see the league get dominated by, like, the guys in the same way that we have traditionally?
Yeah, but I think, it would be more. When I got that take, as you said, Steph, I kind of agree with it, but this is the only thing I'm going to hold off. If Denver would have won it this year, we would have been right back to going towards it. Because I feel like once you win two, if you win two
especially
in a row
back
or two
to
in, yeah, back to back or 2 in 3 years, you're kind of starting to get in a somewhat dynasty era, like going towards it. But if you win back to back for sure. And so before I thought about Denver, and let's be real, the Celtics actually can win again this year. They bring it.
They're going to be the favorites.
They signed everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, White, everybody got over 100 million. Everybody got between 100 and 300 million. They signed everybody back on their team. So when you think about it like that, I think it could happen. Hey, great job, too, Jeffrey, how you broke all that down. Now, I was a huge basketball fan. I became love of the game. You know, of course, I knew Jordan, but I was little. Between 2000 and 2010 is like my love for that.
Yeah.
So it's a couple more people I don't know if they didn't dominate that I just want to bring in that era. Like, I think Tracy McGrady was great in that era. No, I mean, from a dominant point, the Ray Allens, the Vince Carter, Allen Iverson. That was a kind of like my – but you was going about who won championships.
Correct.
Right?
Like, who kind of like defined the league?
You don't think Allen Iverson defined it a little bit between that – that. I think it was nothing like that ever before.
I think he is one of the most must-watch. Peak Allen Iverson was something to behold because we've never seen somebody that was... It was really like a Mighty Mouse. You know what I mean? Like, it was... And how quick he was. Like, you knew you couldn't stop him. He knew... I think he's more of a cultural phenomenon, though, than, like, you can still tell the story of the NBA without Allen Iverson, I think, in that era.
You think
despite the fact that I think he's a significant character.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, realistically, I mean, what? He got his crowning achievement, honestly, was taking that Sixers team and winning game one of the NBA Finals for a gentleman's sweep.
Yeah, I think the bigger thing, too, though, Jeffrey, I don't know if you remember their roster. He took one of the worst rosters in
that
history to the finals. And it's another thing, because I coached Tyler Harris before. This is another thing. When you do interviews, when somebody is that scared, people say that they was frightened to hold a guy 6 feet or under 6 feet. And, you know, I know you had a laptop. The scoring time, he had to be in the top three for 5-6 straight years. He won it a couple times. I seen Allen Iverson hit 30s and 40s and 50s. And this was still during an era where they didn't just come down and take threes like we did now. Like when you see this era, James Harden and all these people, every day in the NBA, this person broke a record, this person. But that's because they're shooting a lot more and they're taking a lot of threes. Could you imagine, like, all love to Steph Curry, but could you imagine, like, Ray Allen and Reggie Miller being able to, Reggie Miller being able to take as many threes we take? I think he will be twice the player he is. We would talk about him more.
Yeah, because it changes all the numbers. Like, in the end, we're still kind of suckers for stats.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, their points skyrocket. I think that's kind of the other thing, though. It's like, as much as I appreciate Steph, I hate what the Warriors did to basketball. My biggest gripe right now in sports is we've, quote unquote, optimized everything. We've gone super analytical, and now everybody's playing the same way. What I've always enjoyed about sports is variety. Mm-hmm. It's watching different styles. How is this going to work? But now everyone's basically doing the exact same thing. Whether it's like football, everybody's running essentially the same offenses. Like, there's not the team that's like, okay, this team only throws it 20 times a game. How can they keep up? But not. It's like everybody's doing the same thing. Baseball's become the same way. Everybody's throwing it as hard as they can and swinging as hard as they can, and it's taken the variety out. The problem with the Warriors is they usher in everyone just playing, like, literally just come down and just fire as many threes as you can.
I mean, I love Steph Curry, but like you say, it has even became harder on my level. Do you know how many elementary, middle school, high school kids that have wide open layups and just stop? And so they're just doing it because they love the game. But then you do have some NBA GMs or analytical guys, my bad, that have said that's a better percentage.
No, that's their whole deal is like, okay, yes, I get that 3 points is better. 3 points is more than two. I get that. But this idea that, like, I mean, we've completely gotten rid of mid-range game. The other thing that Harrington, we're talking about this. Guys can't throw entry passes anymore.
They can't, and it's frustrating all the big guys.
You know what I mean? Like, it's unbelievable to watch. Like, Penny was even talking about it when he was asked. I think Shaq asked him about Edie, and kind of the way that defense has changed. And he's like, "Man, guys can't just make passes in the interior anymore.
That's considered special."
Yeah.
And let me ask you this. A guy taking, when you get to the point of having a wide open layup and you take a three, you know what that sounds like? It almost sounds like, what if everybody just, you know, 4th and 1 is considered a high percentage. But what if everybody just started, like,
well, if you've been,
people have been doing it more. I will say that. It's a couple teams. I forgot what team it was, they said. But that's how it is now. That's compared to the NFL. Like, literally, everybody's just going for it on 4th down, like, most of the time.
I'm still waiting for that graphic that comes up on ESPN when it's 4th down, I'm still waiting for it to say punt. Every single time it says go for it.
Yeah, it says it's a it's a way higher percentage, yeah.
And it's like, I understand the math behind it. I also don't believe that sports is played on a spreadsheet. Like, you've just turned it into a card game. And that's not really how it works.
Yeah, it's some stuff analytical. You can't just put every. Now I get it. You do pay. It's people that do some deep research in this, and it's people that get paid. I don't want to disrespect them, but if you have ever been around sports, there's some stuff that go in between the lines that you just can't take away. You know, you got some guys right now, not saying they're not good in the NBA, but because their analyticals are good, they're getting paid, but they're not getting anything done because you're looking at their analyticals to it.
I'm convinced a large part of it, though, I think it's so coaches can have something to, like a if, for instance, if I go for it on fourth and one and I don't get it, it's like, well, the card said go for it. Like we do that. It's to sit there and be like, so you can't question me. It's like the card said go for it.
So I don't gamble a lot. I listen to you a lot, yeah. Other people, but it's almost like, so one game I do play,
yeah.
And I go to Vegas here and there, because I haven't been to a casino in a while here. It's blackjack.
Yeah.
So it's some slick rules. I don't know if you ever played it. So it's some rules
it's
to it
game.
Where it's like, and I didn't follow the rules sometime and lost, and I did not. Like, if you hit 12, you don't supposed to hit again, or you, because most of the time, so you'll get a hard, you'll get a hard 10 or whatever, right?
Well, it also depends what the dealer's showing.
What?
So if the dealer's showing a
less
bust card,
that, yeah.
Yeah. If the dealer's showing, like, if you've got 12 and the dealer's showing a 4.
Yeah, like a low card.
Right, you're not supposed to hit that.
But let's say you don't supposed to. So, and then if you hit it and you get it, the table's happy at you, but
they're usually, I'll tell you exactly, because this drives me insane. I don't care. All I care about is being predictable.
Yeah.
Like, some people don't. I'm a guy that hits on 16.
Okay.
If they're showing. I hit on 16. I don't care if you're someone that doesn't hit on 16, but just play the same way. I can't stand when sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Like, play consistently.
So, let me ask you this. Would you not like me at the table? Because I done had some tables that loved me. I done had some tables that didn't. I'm a team player. I'm a coach. But to me, when I'm at the blackjack table, sir, first of all, I like to go when it's not that many people, just two or three. When it's five or six, it kind of, unless everybody winning it. So at the end of the day, even though I'm a team player, Jeffrey, I feel like it's still between me and the dealer at the end of the day a little bit, because it's like, you know, this is my separate money that I put to the side that I feel like I can win or lose right now. I feel like if you got people at the table that one is a little too desperate, like,
yeah,
you shouldn't be down here gambling if this is your last $200. So you're like getting like attitudes with people.
Oh, I will never like say anything. I kind of agree, because like in the end, it's your money. And the problem though is the way you play affects the cards I get.
Yeah.
Now, not at an extreme level, but it does. And so that's kind of where I get annoyed. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk some SEC football. We'll do that with Blake Topmeyer next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas. This is sports the way it should be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
At B. Topmeyer. All right, Blake, this is kind of the big picture question that I have. Is there, how much responsibility does Kirby Smart have for the amount of arrests that are happening?
I think he has some responsibility because I don't think the disciplinary measures at Georgia, have been very intense at all. I mean, there's really never been kind of a line in the sand from Kirby Smart that this type of conduct is unacceptable. This is happening really throughout the country, throughout Division I sports. Things that we would have expected athletes to be disciplined for even 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago, now get a slap on the wrist at most. I mean, we heard Kirby at SEC Media Days talking about how, off the field incidents now can result in fines from the NIL collective. I guess Kirby wanted that to sound like discipline, but to me that sounded like pass the buck. Like, the head coach isn't going to be involved in discipline anymore, but, that's going to be the responsibility of donors and folks who oversee the collectives and stripping away a little NIL money. Like, I mean, I kind of get it. If you want to punish someone, you take away the money, but you're the head coach. You're the CEO of the operation. You can't pass the buck on player discipline to your NIL collective. It doesn't hurt Georgia. Like, if anything, I think Georgia's seen as the place where you can play ball and party engage in shenanigans off the field, and, you're back out on the field on Saturday.
Well, it's like one of these weird things where it's like, on the one hand, there's always this prevailing narrative, like, he could stop it if he wanted to. And I'm sitting there going, like, I get what you're saying, but I don't know, man. Like, and also, like, to be very clear, like, I think there's a clear difference between poor driving habits and then domestic violence, which is what Ra Ra Thomas is accused of, or family violence. Family violence. Like, I think those are two things. I'm not saying that speeding and driving recklessly is a good thing, but at the same time, it's like, I think that's in a different category of potentially hitting a member of your family, like beating them up. So I think those are two different things. But it's also like, I feel like sometimes in the media, we do the move where we act like we've never been in a locker room, and, the Kansas City Chiefs don't seem to be able to stop it either. You know what I mean? Like, at a certain point, it's like, I know he's not blameless, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know if, like, if he just snapped his fingers, if it would just stop.
Yeah, I just think, like, when we look at the evolution of player discipline over the years, it's just gotten lighter and lighter. I mean, a lot of some of these offenses would be automatic, one game suspensions in the past. Or in some of the more serious instances, multi-game suspensions in the past. And it's not just Georgia, but it does seem to be, a bigger problem at Georgia than elsewhere because of the number of incidents that really just aren't disciplined in the way they were. Like I said, even 5 years ago, a lot of this stuff at a lot of places was almost automatic. Like, you're going to sit a week for some of this stuff. And would that discipline eliminate it? Probably not. Would it curtail it? I don't know. I mean, I sort of think that it would curtail it some. Like, if you knew your playing opportunities were going to be reduced by nefarious off-the-field conduct, I think that would make some guys think twice. But now, it's like you want to drive 90 miles an hour and in a 40 mile an hour zone, you're probably going to be back out on the field on Saturdays. And you're right. Like, not all these incidents are created equal, but the number of incidents that keep happening at Georgia, I think, is alarming. And some of them are severe incidents. And we've seen with even the driving stuff, I mean, quite tragically, when we're talking about these really, really high rates of speed, where you're doubling the speed limit, fatalities can be involved, as we witnessed at Georgia. So it is serious stuff. I do think Kirby Smart can and should be doing more, but I'm not sure what the incentive for him is to do more. You know, Georgia, by all appearances, its administration is not turning up the heat on Kirby to increase his player discipline. He's got the best program in the country right now. I think if you look over the course of like the last 5 years, he's not struggling to get high level talent. And this is sort of one of the issues of discipline being left in the hands of the institution entirely. I mean, you mentioned the Chiefs. Yeah, they've had their issues, but also the NFL is involved in, yeah, in player discipline as well. And there's no entity like that in college football. And I think for a long time, coaches took it on themselves and schools took it on themselves of, we're going to dole out appropriate discipline to meet the crime, to meet the misconduct. And I think in the last 5 years, they just kind of shrugged their shoulders and say, why should we do that anymore? It only hurts us. And there's no one else to step in. There's no league. There's no commissioner. I mean, yeah, there's an SEC commissioner, but he doesn't get involved in player discipline. There's no one else to step in and kind of pick up the rope if the university's not going to do it.
No, I mean, like, to your point, like, I get it. Gundy's never exactly been one for coach speak, but the thought of 5 years ago, someone talking as candidly about a player getting a DUI and why he's not going to sit him, like, that doesn't happen. But then, I mean, like, I do also, like, acknowledge from the coach perspective, what am I going to do? Kick him off the team? Like, that's not going to be a deterrent for him. Like, in the end, they're like, fine, I'll just go in the portal. I'll get paid again. Because you know somebody's, yeah, taking him.
Yeah, somebody would take him. And I just think for the coach, like, the demands are as high as ever. Their job ultimately, you know, when we put all the sound bites aside, their job is to win football games. That's why they're getting paid millions of dollars. They want to win football games. If you just wanted to hire someone to mold young men, you could hire someone a lot cheaper that could probably do a lot better job in some instances of molding young men than the guys on the sidelines. Their job is to win games, and disciplining and suspending your players, I think, sometimes works against you in that effort. Might help clean up some of this off-the-field conduct, might help guys learn some life lessons, but I don't know that it helps you win football games when you're sitting your talented players who you know, are coloring outside the lines off the field. So, yeah, I mean, I do think there would be some merits of some sort of third-party entity to kind of set some standards for player discipline, whether that be the conference office. You know, it has to be something like that where it can be consistent. Yeah, fans would think it's unfair. They would cry conspiracy. That happens all the time, as it is anyway.
That's what we do with Goodell. You
know, right. Yeah, we see that in the NFL already. But, you know, I do think it's at the point now where we've seen, if left in the hands of the institutions, they're not going to be as heavy-handed with player discipline as they were in years past.
Does this become like a, like, I was asked this earlier this morning. It's like, is there a coach that it kind of like hurt his reputation? And I was like, I guess Urban to a certain degree, but he still got the Ohio State job. Like, when Urban was at Florida, but like, I don't know. I mean, like, Tom Osborne has some very like uncomfortable things. If you look at it, it's like, he's still Dr. Tom Osborne. It's like, I don't know. Like, when, it just seems like it's kind of just part of it. It's like, yeah, well, that's the cost of having a good football team.
It only hurts your reputation if the player discipline dovetails with a dip in performance on the field, because then the narrative becomes true or untrue that you're having disciplinary issues off the field, and those disciplinary issues are spilling over into the locker room and on the field, and you got bad chemistry. You know, you got guys that don't listen to anybody. That becomes the narrative if you're having off-the-field incidents combined with bad on-the-field performance. But as long as you keep winning games, which Kirby has done, you know, I don't really think it hurts the coach. And I actually took a contrarian take last summer when all these driving incidents, that was kind of the peak of it last summer. And there were a lot of opinions out there of like, this is an alarming sign for the Georgia football season. And I kind of went the other direction and said, shame on Kirby for not doing, at least trying to do a little bit more than he's doing on this. But B, no, it doesn't hurt Georgia football. I just didn't buy that narrative at all, that all these traffic incidents somehow were going to spill over on the field, and the guy with the 4.440 and the five-star recruit was suddenly going to forget how to play football. Like, no, they were still going to be good. They still were good. And the fact that they lost to Alabama in the SEC championship had nothing to do with their need for speed off the field. That was just two good teams, and Alabama won. So, yeah, I don't really think it hurts a coach's reputation unless it coincides with, a downturn in performance on the field, and we haven't seen that at Georgia.
No, I kind of actually take the opposite take. When I usually see the arrest record, I'm like, they're going to be pretty good.
That's right. Yeah, you always hear the, we're back.
Well, to me, it's like, it's my number one rule with the NFL draft. Like, if I'm drafting a defender and he doesn't have red flags, I've got red flags. Like, that's how I want my defensive guys.
Yeah, it's as I said, at the end of the day, coaches' job are to win. We can act like it's not. Administrators will say otherwise. Coaches will even talk about how they're molding young men. That's a PR campaign, but no one rooted in reality who follows the ins and outs of this sport and is not living in fantasy land actually believes that. They know the coach is getting paid $10 million to win football games, and as long as he wins football games, wins enough of them, all this other stuff kind of unfortunately or just as reality, it fades into the background.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right in the sense that now what incentive is there for the coaches to discipline them? Like, in the end, it's like, well, I'm only hurting myself. Like, you're 100% right in the sense like we just leave it up to them, and then in the end, like, what are they going to do? They're going to do whatever it takes to win.
Mm-hmm. The only way a coach feels incentivized to have some discipline, I think, is if they feel, the lawlessness off the field is going to affect the locker room atmosphere or the locker room chemistry. If you think that player discipline off the field is going to spill over into your locker room, then I think you can feel incentivized, to tighten the discipline a little bit. But if you think that you can still get your guys to be disciplined when they're on the field, when they're in practice, when they're in locker room, and whatever happens on Friday nights when you don't have control of them doesn't affect their performance the next day, then I think you kind of, to a certain extent, shrug your shoulders and say, hey, we're here to win football games. I don't think this stuff affects the performance of my team. I mean, there might be some coaches out there, I think there probably still are, that have a firm enough moral compass that they would draw a little more of a line in the sand. But those type of guys are probably getting fewer and far between. And even if you would like to have that moral compass, again, it comes back to, that moral compass isn't going to save you when your record isn't there to back you up. You have to have the wins and losses in order, or no one's going to care about your moral compass.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in general, it feels like guys that are like that, they have like unlimited job security, but I don't even know if that exists anymore. I mean, if they could get Pat Fitzgerald, they can get anyone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's tough to think of someone that was like safer at his school than he was.
I mean, Mark Stoops has the ultimate job security. I mean, maybe that is why he can. I mean, I don't know if you saw the interview that Stoops did. I'm kind of changing gears with 24/7 Sports about how he belittled Kentucky's NIL operation and said he's so busy fundraising he's barely got time to coach. I mean, that type of commentary only comes from a coach who has the ultimate job security, as I think Stoops has built up at Kentucky. But yeah, I mean, other than him.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.